My administration is working overtime to show that our climate commitment is action, not words.
U.S. President Joe Biden on the world stage at COP26. It's Tuesday, November 2nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Mimi Heibels in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, World Food Program warns of risk of global hunger from climate change. U.S. Democratic lawmakers push for climate spending. Australian international travel resumes for some. Japanese startup to harness typhoon energy. Street arts under Taliban rule. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Right now, world leaders are gathered in Glasgow, Scotland for COP26, or Conference of the Parties, the crucial UN climate summit. U.S. President Joe Biden arrived at the conference after traveling from the G20 in Rome. Speaking at the conference on day one, President Biden reiterated that the U.S. is back at the table when it comes to climate change. Rena Roy has more from Glasgow for ABC News.
President Biden on the world stage at one of the most important climate conferences in years.
We'll demonstrate to the world the United States is not only back at the table, but hopefully leading by the power of our example. My administration is working overtime to show that our climate commitment is action, not words.
Biden's infrastructure plan directs $555 billion to fighting climate change, but experts are skeptical he'll meet his goal of cutting greenhouse gases in half by 2030.
We only have a brief window left before us to raise our ambitions and to meet the task that's rapidly narrowing. This is a decisive decade.
He joins leaders from nearly 200 countries, kicking off negotiations at the pivotal two-week summit in Glasgow. The goal is to agree on how to limit global warming, with the world heating up more in the last 29 years than in the previous 110 years.
If we don't get serious about climate change today, it will be too late for our children to do so tomorrow.
The key topics, reducing those gas emissions plus phasing out coal, and how wealthier nations can help support developing countries already feeling the effects of our changing planet.
Failure to provide the critical finance and that of loss and damage is measured, my friends, in lives and livelihoods in our communities. This is immoral and it is unjust.
Some are concerned about the success of this year's conference, with leading polluters like China, Russia, and Saudi Arabia not attending.
Now, as they try to decide how to move forward, countries are also reviewing their progress on the Paris Climate Accord signed at the 2015 summit. Rena Roy, ABC News, Glasgow, Scotland.
This year's summit builds on a legally binding agreement that 196 parties, including the U.S., Russia, and China, signed 6 years ago in Paris. The international treaty commits those countries to embark on emissions cuts that aim to limit the planet's warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial levels. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Japan PM Kishida, strengthened by election win, lays out broad policy plans. Man with knife injures 17 on Tokyo train, starts fire. Former U.S. Ambassador Bill Richardson heads to Myanmar. Anti-Taliban group registers with U.S. to try to build Afghan resistance. Pakistan Islamists reach agreement to end violent rally. Additional coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The World Food Program says that without consolidated global action, the world faces a crisis of acute hunger due to accelerating climate change. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Food Programme presents a bleak picture of the impact global warming and climate-related extreme weather events are having on people's lives. It says climate shocks are destroying lives, crops, and livelihoods, and undermining people's ability to feed themselves. It cites Mozambique as an example of a country particularly vulnerable to climate change. It notes millions of people are suffering from food scarcity because of punishing cyclones, drought, and pest infestations leading to agricultural losses. WFP spokesman Thompson Feary said that hunger will increase rapidly throughout vulnerable communities worldwide if global action is not taken to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, which are leading to climate change.
Research shows that if global temperatures keep rising to hit the 2 degrees Celsius mark, an additional 189 million people could become food insecure. Now, in a 4 degrees Celsius warmer world, this number could increase by as many as 1.8 billion people.
The WFP describes the devastating wide-reach climate change is having on the livelihoods and communities in the dry corridor of Central America, in Afghanistan, where drought was officially declared in June, and in Yemen, where severe and frequent floods have damaged and destroyed infrastructure and homes. Feary says the WFP is helping people in communities where food is in short supply to prepare for, as well as respond and recover from climate shocks and stresses. He says the agency has reached more than 6 million people in 28 countries with climate risk management solutions. For example, he says the WFP provided cash assistance for 120,000 people in Bangladesh 4 days ahead of severe flooding to help them protect critical assets. In Madagascar, he says, the WFP has launched a microinsurance program to help farmers who have lost their crop due to drought.
The World Food Program is calling for coordinated global climate action to urgently address the challenges of the climate crisis and to reduce its impact on hunger. More specifically, we are advocating for a shift from crisis response to risk management.
Feary says governments should manage risks rather than disasters. He says a more forward-looking perspective is needed to prepare for bigger and more frequent climate shocks and enable early action to help prevent predictable climate emergencies. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, China has reactivated a direct air trade link with Afghanistan in a bid to assist the war-ravaged neighbor's new Taliban rulers in dealing with a deepening economic and humanitarian crisis. A cargo plane carrying 45 tons of pine nuts Sunday flew out of Kabul for Chinese markets, marking the restoration of the commercial corridor after the Islamist Taliban seized control of Afghanistan in August. China, one of the largest importers of Afghan pine nuts, launched the air freight corridor in November of 2018 to help Afghanistan increase its exports of dry and fresh fruits to Chinese markets and address a massive trade deficit. Beijing has long seen bilateral economic cooperation as a way to stabilize Afghanistan and deter anti-China militants from using the country as a launching pad for terrorist attacks. Still ahead on VOA Asia, Democratic lawmakers in the U.S. push for a curtailed but still large $1.75 trillion spending package that includes more than $500 billion on climate spending. Happening now in Asia, Taiwan Monday received 1.5 million doses of Moderna vaccine donated by the U.S. government. A shipment of 2.5 million donated doses arrived in June. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're so glad you decided to join us on VOA Asia. U.S. President Joe Biden is in Glasgow, Scotland this week for the UN Climate Summit. While back at home, U.S. Democrats in Congress try to hammer out an agreement on a massive spending bill. Michelle Quinn reports for VOA.
President Joe Biden likely will ask world leaders at the summit in Glasgow for tough measures to combat climate change. His supporters are hoping he will get a boost from back home as fellow Democratic lawmakers push for a curtailed but still large $1.75 trillion spending plan with a wide array of programs, including more than $500 billion on climate spending. Pete Buttigieg is the U.S. Transportation Secretary. He spoke to ABC this week.
What we have in front of us right now, this is not half a loaf. It is a feast of good policy. It is the most transformative legislation for families, for healthcare, for climate that we've seen, certainly in my lifetime. And it's going to be an extraordinary achievement as soon as we can get it to the president's desk.
With divisions between Democratic progressives and moderates, the long-delayed legislation has come down in size, with spending on paid family leave among programs cut. On the climate front, it still includes tax credits for the use of cleaner fuels and electrified vehicles, money to address extreme weather, and tax incentives for renewable energy such as wind and solar power. Higher taxes on the wealthy and other measures will pay for the programs. But the public, perhaps weary of the months-long negotiations, may have stopped paying attention. Almost 70% say they know just some or little to nothing about what's in the legislation and a separate bipartisan infrastructure package, according to a new ABC Ipsos poll. Republican leaders remain opposed to the spending package. Kevin McCarthy, a Republican, is the House Minority Leader.
Trillions of dollars in spending, major expansions of government agencies, and even more inflation that will lead to higher costs for all America. Those are all on the table. Yet the details change by the minute.
Without any Republican votes, Biden will need all the Democrats' support in the 50-50 Senate, with Vice President Kamala Harris available to break a tie and lose no more than three more Democratic votes in the House of Representatives. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Be sure to read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Shanghai Disneyland was suddenly shut down on Sunday evening, reportedly over a single COVID-19 case. Thousands of tourists were put through mass coronavirus testing, surrounded by healthcare workers dressed from head to toe in the white protective suits. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Australians are being allowed to travel overseas without COVID-19 restrictions for the first time in almost 600 days. Previously, they needed government permission to go overseas under strict measures designed to curb the spread of the coronavirus. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
After more than 18 months, Australia is reconnecting with the world as vaccination rates increase. There were tearful reunions at Sydney Airport as the first overseas passengers landed after restrictions came to an end. Australians can now travel freely overseas without needing official permission. Returning travellers flying home into the states of New South Wales and Victoria no longer face mandatory hotel quarantine. They must, however, be double vaccinated, and only Australian citizens, permanent residents, and their immediate families can return home at this stage. Australia will reopen quarantine-free entry to fully vaccinated Singaporeans from November 21. But it's unclear when other foreign nationals, who've been mostly banned since March 2020, will be permitted to enter. Thousands of Australians have been stranded overseas during the pandemic by some of the world's toughest border controls. Authorities placed limits on the number of travellers allowed back because of constraints on the quarantine system. Melbourne Airport has also been preparing for the resumption of large-scale passenger numbers. Chief Executive Lyle Strambi says pandemic border closures have been hard on staff.
We haven't really stopped flying, so we've been able to keep things working and making sure that everything's in great shape. But the stop-start nature of the whole episode we've been through has been, you know, really tough. In particular, you know, for the employees at the airport, we'd normally have 20,000 people working at the airport. I think a few times they were down to as low as 500 people. So it's been really hard on those individuals in particular.
Internal border controls remain in parts of Australia. Residents in Sydney and Melbourne, for example, can now fly freely to Paris, France, but not to Perth in Western Australia. Travellers from New South Wales and Victoria, which have been at the centre of Delta variant outbreaks this year, can only enter Western Australia with an approved exemption permit and must be double vaccinated. Queensland state authorities plan to ease their internal border restrictions on December 17. Australia has diagnosed 170,000 coronavirus cases during the pandemic. 1,700 people have died. More than 77% of eligible Australians have been fully vaccinated. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In related news, the global death toll from COVID-19 topped 5 million on Monday, less than 2 years into the crisis that has not only devastated poor countries, but also those with first-rate health systems. Together, the U.S., the European Union, Britain, and Brazil, all upper, middle, or high-income countries, account for one-eighth of the world's population, but nearly half of all reported deaths. Making headlines in Asia, Thai authorities have given the green light to vaccinated tourists from over 60 low-risk countries to skip hotel quarantine on arrival, providing the tourist sector with a much-needed lifeline after 18 months of COVID curbs. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, in Malawi, a Chinese national, Lin Yun Hua, has filed a challenge at the Malawi High Court against a 14-year jail sentence, which a lower court gave him last month after he was convicted of three wildlife crimes. Government authorities say they are ready to face Lin in court. Lamek Messina reports for VOA from Malawi.
Lin Yun Hua is allegedly a leader of an African wildlife trafficking syndicate known as the Lingjian Gang, named after the husband and wife leaders. It has operated out of Malawi for at least a decade. Malawi's authorities arrested Lin in August 2019 following a three-month manhunt. Police say he was found with the horns of five rhinos chopped into 103 pieces last month. The magistrate court in the capital, Lilongwe, sentenced him to 14 years in prison. Crispin Ndalama is the lawyer for Lin.
I can simply say we filed a notice of appeal, but we are still consulting with our client on how to move forward. We haven't yet filed all the documentation. We have just filed a notice of appeal because you need to appeal within a period of 30 days after the judgment has been delivered. So the period would have expired, I think, yesterday.
Ndalama says the appeal asks the court to reduce the 14-year sentence on the grounds that Lin was a first-time offender, among other reasons. In all, Malawian authorities have sent 14 people to prison in connection with the trafficking syndicate, including Lin's wife and son-in-law. Lin's daughter was also arrested in December 2020 for alleged money laundering offenses. Her case is ongoing. Wildlife campaigners have commended Lin's sentence, saying it would help deter other would-be wildlife traffickers from committing similar crimes. Mary Rice is the executive director of the London-based Environmental Investigation Agency, an organization campaigning against the environmental crimes and abuse. She says the 14-year sentence was appropriate.
I think, to be honest, the sentence is fair and commensurate with all the charges that were filed against him. So I'm sure the prosecution will counter the appeal and I guess the case rumbles on.
Brighton Kunchedwa is director of the Malawi's Department of National Parks and Wildlife. He says the government is ready to face Lin again in court.
In the first place, it is his right to appeal, but we are ready for him. Just as we did in the lower court. court. It is our hope and prayer that probably it will come back victorious.
However, Kunchedwa says the country is now experiencing a decline in wildlife trafficking.
I think following the hefty sentences that are coming out of court, we are seeing a reduction indeed of these cases related to ivory trafficking.
The High Court has yet to set a date to hear Lynn's appeal. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
In other news, Japan's meteorological agency says typhoons have hit the island nation about 26 times a year for the last 10 years. Japanese energy startup Chal Energy looks to use the storms as a power source for the country. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Battered by strong wind and rain, the Magnus vertical axis wind turbine generates power. Japanese startup Chal Energy says its turbine could offer a silver lining to storms often seen in Japan. CEO Atsushi Shimizu tells Reuters building a new type of turbine can harness storm energy into something useful.
If we can just partially leverage the vast energy brought by typhoons, we can, in a way, consider typhoons not just as disasters, but as a source of energy.
Wind turbines typically look like giant fans with vertical blades that spin to generate power. But as the turbines become bigger, they turn into liabilities in storms with strong winds. Chal Energy's Atsushi Shimizu says the vertical axis changes how storms hit turbines and creates an opportunity to harness renewable energy.
The vertical axis makes it possible to not be affected by wind direction. By using the Magnus system instead of a propeller, the system can be controlled safely, even in strong winds, and also generate electricity.
Chal Energy is testing the turbine in Okinawa and southern Japan, as well as in the Philippines. Meteorologists say that due to climate change, typhoons in the region are increasing in both frequency and severity. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And in other news, Afghan artists and activists say the Taliban have replaced their murals with their logo and slogans, making it impossible for them to continue working in Afghanistan. VOA's Yalda Baktosh has more.
This is Kabul. Before its fall to the Taliban, these vibrant murals were painted by artists and activists to raise awareness and promote peace. But the Taliban have been replacing the murals with their black and white logos and slogans since seizing control of the country this summer.
The murals were to create awareness about preventing violence against women, health issues such as polio, supporting the Afghan security forces, peace, and other issues. When the Taliban regime came to power, all the murals in Kabul and other provinces were removed.
The paintings on these protective cement barriers in Kabul say the artists and activists were aimed at fostering hope in the war-torn country.
I think that the murals that art lords were painting together with the people of Afghanistan were helping us to forget our grief and pain for a moment and to think about kindness, love, and hope for the country.
Art Lords, a grassroots arts organization, invited regular Afghans to participate in the paintings with the goal of making Kabul into the world's street arts capital. Now, Afghan artists say no place for themselves under Taliban rule.
There is no place for art in the Taliban's ideology. They have no idea how arts and culture can help a country or give hope to a country.
When they ruled the country 20 years ago, the Taliban banned all forms of art. Now, despite the Taliban's promises of transformation, Afghan artists say the group has remained unchanged. While some artists have fled the country, others remain and say they hope to continue their work.
Right now, I am in Afghanistan and don't have any problem. It is true that I am deprived of my personal rights, but I am working from home. I will see if things get better in Afghanistan. It is our country. We must be here and work for it. If not, we will have to leave.
While some will continue their work, it appears that for now, the face of Kabul will stay black and white. Yalda Baktosh, VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Chris Cascale, Keith Lane, Jessica Stone, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Mimi Heibels in Washington. Please stay safe and make it a great day.